Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the A-Side Live Chat on MMAfighting.com. I am, of course, your host, Jose Young. It's a slow week because there's no UFC for the first time since, I don't know, the millennia turned. So, no media day. So, we'll bring you your content anyway. But joining us this week, it's his re-debut on the A-Side Live Chat. The last time he was on, Casey Lydon wasn't even a regular yet. It was still the old style of A-Side where I was reading the questions off of a screen and you guys wouldn't get to see it. It was back in the dark eras where, I don't know, my live stream would crash every other day and people would make fun of me in the comment section for my audio difficulties or everything freezing and the world seemed against me. But rejoining us this week, making his re-debut since joining Team MMA Fighting is, you know him, his voice from our preview shows, post-fight shows, weigh-in shows, Between the Links, What the Heck. Anything else you host, Mike? It's Mike Heck, by the way. What else you host?
I don't know. I'm just happy to not be hosting anything. So there must be something about the holidays because the last time I was on, it was Thanksgiving Eve. It's Christmas Eve. So, I mean, it must be a holiday thing, but I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Yeah, so everyone who's been curious, hey, Mike hosts all the time, but what's his thoughts and opinions and everything in the world of MMA? Now you can hear them. Mike, thanks for joining us. But Casey, how's life in your... My goodness, look at that.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
Button your top button, sir.
Oh, yeah. All right. You got to get a little scandalous. Have a little too much eggnog, you know.
I know. It's too much eggnog at 10 a.m.
Silk nog.
Is that a blanket hanging behind you? Or a puzzle? Or what? Oh, wow.
Sorry. I had my headphones out.
What is it? So for those of you that listen, Casey Lydon has a fireplace going. He has a brown cardigan over a flannel shirt, drinking a smoothie.
It's a little backdrop. You go to the mall, you know, you have Santa sitting in front of it and stuff.
He has a backdrop of some festive Christmas-themed mall. He has a Gravediggers poster. And who's that referee covered in blood?
Hold on.
Oh, and he has to go get something. Fun story about that. There you go. I was wondering. I was hoping you were going to get that. And he has – which referee is that?
Is this Tony Weeks? No, Tony.
I think so.
Yeah, Tony Weeks.
I think so.
This is one of the best traditions.
It's probably one of the five greatest photos in the history of combat sports of referee Tony Weeks, right?
Yeah.
Covered in blood after a very – I can't remember the match, but I remember when that photo was taken. She sent to the Slack group back when she worked at MMA Fighting. So, yeah, that is an epic picture. And fun story, Mike. I think it was March. It might have been the March or December. I can't quite remember. But it was one of the fight cards that when we could actually go to fight cards, you went out to eat one dinner, and that referee walked into the restaurant like a month after Esther shot that photo. So
what?
Yeah, we were crazy. Like ordering, we sat down and then all of a sudden we look, I'm like, hey, Esther, that's the bloody guy from your picture. She's like, oh, yeah, that guy. So it was a little coincidence. But anyway, you guys know the drill. This is the A-Side Live Chat. You can ask us anything you want. I am here in Arizona where the pandemic has hit a massive spike. I'm staying here for Christmas. Mike, how's the holidays over in bitter cold New England?
Snowy. We got like 2 feet of snow last week, so that's fun. But then it's going to be in the 50s the next couple of days. So now there's flood watches everywhere here in Massachusetts because all the snow is going to melt. So,
but I'm excited. Like that sounds like a classic New England winter.
I got a 7-year-old, so the spirit is high here in good old Berkshire County, Massachusetts.
Has he been good for Santa?
Sometimes. 50-50.
That's a good answer. Yeah, he's good. That's a good answer.
He's good.
Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, before we get to the questions, have you guys ever seen that movie Claws, the animated film? It's got Claws. It's on, not like Santa Claus, not Claws, but have you heard about that?
No.
I haven't seen it.
I highly recommend it. It came out about, I think, 2 years ago, a year ago. I think it was nominated for Best Animated Film or whatever. Man, it is such a good Christmas film. I'm just saying, check it out. It's a great Claws? Family film. Claws, yeah, like Santa Claus, like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, and I just saw it last night, and like, it's just a terrific animated family Christmas film.
I don't watch a lot of Christmas films. Not that I have anything against it. It's never been my thing. But yeah, I'll give it a shot.
You know what? Me neither. But I felt like watching a Christmas film last night, and I got a good recommendation from it, and it came through. So here, wait, hold on. Got
someone
say hi. Yeah.
Yes.
Look at that.
Special guests everywhere.
So,
which one is this?
This is Fezzik.
Is she the one that sits on me?
Yeah. She's the one that barks at you if you're sitting on her. If you're sleeping on her couch.
No, she doesn't bark. She just sits. She doesn't even like make a scene. Like, so I stayed at their house once, Mike, when I went to LA for some independent wrestling show, and they said I could sleep on their couch, which is Fezzik's spot to sleep. So instead of barking or growling or finding a new place, she just went to her spot, which happens to be where I was laying, and just laid basically like on my face. She goes, this is my spot. I don't care if you're there. I'm sitting here. So that's that dog. And we've been bonded ever since. Anyway, you guys know the drill. You can ask any question you want on the YouTube comments, on Twitter, on the site. I have a feeling my computer is going to shut down at any moment for whatever reason. So, yeah, let's do it.
You know what? First thing, we're going to go to a big old question. Lots of questions in this one.
My goodness. From T. Gordette, 1982. Is this the Tristan Gordette that blows up our comments every single show? Probably. What's up, Tristan? 2, MMA fighting. And he gave us 3 questions. Number 1, looks like Chandler and Hooker have verbally agreed to fight at UFC 257. Who you got? Now keep in mind what Hooker did to get 2 other fighters that are 5'8 in height, Pearson and Miller. Number 2, on an episode of On to the Next One, Heck and AK Lee suggested Ige's next fight be against Burgos. It was then reported by Mike Heck back in November that'll be Burgos versus Dawadu at UFC 257. Will it now make sense for the UFC to hold Ige versus Hall onto that card as well? Add Ige versus Hall onto that card as well. Number 3, with Manel Capes' UFC debut versus Pantoja being in the works of getting rebooked sometime in February, how much do you think his entrance at flyweight bolsters the division even more as a whole? So a lot to unpack from Mr. Tristan Gordette. So we'll start with number 1. He said, looks like Chandler and Hooker verbally agreed to UFC 257. Have they?
I would say that report at best is premature. That's all I'll say at the moment. It's not done. It hasn't been signed. I'm sure Hooker would be very excited to get that fight. From everything that I've heard, and I know Damon Martin has heard this as well, that is not wholly accurate. So I wouldn't get too excited about that one just yet.
I wish that fight happened, but there's a lot of fights for Chandler I like. The Chandler versus Gaethje fight, I think, would be the one that most people want to see. Maybe the winner of that fights the winner of Poirier and McGregor for the vacant lightweight title, depending on how Dana's meeting with Habib goes. But if Gaethje wants to wait and fight the winner of Poirier versus McGregor at a later date and Chandler fights Hooker, I think that's the next best thing. And of course, the theme of all of this is Charles Oliveira, once again, the forgotten man. But who you got? I don't know, man. That's a tough fight. Hooker does really good against fighters, really well against fighters that are much smaller than him. But Chandler is one of the toughest individuals I've ever seen in my entire life. So toss up in my mind.
It's a good fight. Oh, no, it's excellent.
It's a great fight.
But honestly, Chandler against anyone in the top 5, 10, I mean, that's just a fight. We just want to see it. We just want to see Chandler.
Yeah.
I'm kind of over this whole, like, Chandler this, Chandler that. Like, you know, I mean, I feel like it's just, how long has this been going for now? Like, what's the holdup? Are they still, is it money? What's the holdup? Like, I thought the contracts were already.
Chandler, so he cut weight. He cuts a lot of weight. It's like the weight cut's not easy for him. And since he cut in November or October, whatever the fight was as the backup for Khabib Gaethje, he didn't want a quick turnaround in December to recut. So he said January would be fine. So he pretty much weighed in as the backup and didn't want to turn around right away.
But I guess it's a hold up on is the hold up the date or the opponent?
I think it's the opponent. They're waiting for the meeting with Khabib. Because if Khabib doesn't retire, maybe that throws a big wrench into the lightweight picture. But if he does retire and there's now vacant, that probably opens up a lot more possibilities. Kind of a mini tournament.
If he doesn't retire again,
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, number two, Mike, I'll let you answer this one on to the next one. Achilles suggested Ige against Barbosa, but you have reported Burgos and Duadu, which I freaking love. So Ige Hall, ? You like that fight?
Sure. Ryan Hall against anybody is an excellent fight. Dan Ige is coming off the loss to Calvin Kattar. He's looked great. Besides that, he's had a really good stretch, and losing to Kattar, there's no shame in that whatsoever. So Ige versus Hall would be a really interesting stylistic matchup. So I'd be down for that. I'm sure Casey would love that too.
If Dan Ige is brave enough to step inside that octagon and risk his life, his well-being, his knees to face the GOAT, the greatest ever, Ryan Hall, you go for it, Dan.
Yeah, it's if Andre Feely had beaten Bryce Mitchell, the fight snake would have been Mitchell Ige, just because they've had a lot of bad blood over the last few, like the last year, just a lot of greasiness thrown back and forth between one another. But Bryce Mitchell won, he gets to move on. So yeah, Ige versus Hall sounds good to me, or Hall versus Bryce Mitchell if Ryan Hall just wants a fighter coming off a win. But Ige is the higher ranked fighter, so I'm obviously in favor of that one. So yeah, sign me up. And then the winners of those fights can fight each other.
Yeah,
right.
I dig it.
There you go. You're welcome, UFC.
Is Ryan Hall ranked on the, yes, the UFC? Oh, he is ranked, right? Okay, I can't remember.
He's 13.
So he's in front of Mitchell, correct?
By one spot.
One spot.
If they want to make that fight, cool. But if they don't want to make a grappler versus grappler fight, why not?
Yeah.
That'd be a drastic clash in personalities too.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. I want them to hold up on Hall Mitchell, because I think that fight's like a, I want it to be like a main event or a co-main event, a main event for a fight night, or at least a co-main event for a pay-per-view, because I think that's such a dynamic matchup, both style-wise and personality-wise, that I hope it gets the proper build-up.
I agree, but if they book it, I won't complain. Anyway, number three, Manil Capes UFC debut versus Pantoja might get rebooked for February. What does his addition do for the flyweight division? Mike, you've interviewed Manil Capes probably more than any other MMA journalist out there in the last few months. What does his addition at 125 do for that division?
Right this second, amongst like UFC fans, it does very little. But the second they see him fight, it'll do a lot. It's just one of those things. Like, there's a lot of people who watch Ryzen and seen what he's done over the last couple of years. 2019 specifically, that's when he's really started to turn it on. And I felt like once he got signed back in February or March, those fans are just like, oh my God, it's happening. But then they slotted him in as sort of as the backup fighter for the main event between Figueiredo and Moreno at UFC 256. And people were like, huh, who's this guy? They had no idea. But once they see this man fight and show that killer instinct, I think he's going to be a welcome addition to the division. I think people are going to be really excited to see him moving forward. I think he's like, as soon as you see him fight, you're just going to be like, holy cow, this guy is legit. Not saying Pantoja is a guy that is a walkover or anything like that, but Capes kind of a killer. And I think people are going to be excited to see his future once they actually see that transpire. Casey, I know you're a huge Manel Cape fan, and you're probably more excited than anybody to see this man make his UFC debut.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really worried about it's a year. He's going to have over a year layoff. That's because last time he fought was New Year's Eve in Japan last year. So, man, like, yeah, I'm just bummed for him. How was Manel Cape? How did you ask him about just the layoff, Mike? What do you say about that? Like, I mean, that has to stress him out, you know?
It's the longest of his career. So he's just hanging out and trying to get better. But he's of that mindset. Just like, listen, everything happens for a reason. If my time hasn't come yet, it will. And it's okay. Cool. So he's way more cool about it than I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be like beside himself and antsy about it.
I feel like I'm more stressed out than he is.
Yeah. Well, what he has going for him is it's not like he was injured and on a long layoff. Like he's been through fight camps. So he's been in fight shape, at least, like, you know, it's not like Rob Font where he had to sit and then make rehab his martial art. He was still in fight camp. But I think what sucks is, remember when I was at UFC 256, I asked Dana White about Manel Cape, and he was like, yeah, fighter stepping up is great. It was clearly Dana White had absolutely no idea what Manel Cape was, which is unfortunate because he got the Michael Chandler treatment pretty much outside of all of the promo videos of him working out. Yeah. He got to come in right away and be the backup for a flyweight title fight. But honestly, I think the draw might do benefit him because now he's not going to get thrust in the title picture right away. We still have to do the rematch. And then if Manel Cape does what Manel Cape does and then gets one more fight in and does what Manel Cape does, back-to-back fights, and he gets that title fight, people are going to be more excited. He's not getting rushed into the title fight. Anyway.
I agree.
Thank you for the three questions, Tristan. I hope we answered all of them.
Yeah, break them up next time, man. Jeez. It's like, all right, I'm going to go to the YouTubers. I lost my question. Where'd he go? Here we go.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously, hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common-sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Sandy Fam, another longtime commenter. What is up with the whole thing about Dana saying Rose doesn't want to fight Wiley Zhang? For those of you not seeing this, I'm making the money sign with my fingers. That's probably what the holdup is. So yes, for those of you who aren't aware, UFC President Dana White said Rose doesn't want to fight Zhang Wiley, UFC strawweight champion. So he's looking to book Wiley versus Carla Esparza and then have Rose matched up with Yan Xiaonan, who is another Chinese fighter that has been on an absolute tear. At strawweight, she hasn't lost, I think, in the UFC at all. A lot of wins over some big name competition right away. So we all assumed it was Rose Wiley. Apparently there's a holdup. I think we were all under the same assumption that it's money. Like Rose just wanted money, or maybe she didn't want to fight on Fight Island, or I'm not sure. We don't know. I'm not in Rose's camp. But I like the Carla versus Wiley fight, but I like the Rose versus Wiley fight way more. Casey, at one point in time, you said Rose versus Wiley was your most anticipated title fight of the year, and then you remembered Habib Gaethje still had to happen. So Rose Wiley might not happen yet. What are your thoughts?
I'm just bummed. That's all. I wish UFC and Dana could agree to financial terms with Rose. You know, I wish Dana didn't have to throw this whole, oh, she doesn't want the title. It's like all that BS. Just say it. Just say, we're having some contract negotiations, you know, and that's it. You know, we get that. You know, this is a prize fighting. But just to kind of put it out there that she's not a warrior and all that stuff, come on. So I'm just bummed, but this is all expected now.
Yeah. When they announced it, I think a couple of years ago, I would have been more annoyed. But now I'm just like, this is all bad at this point. Remember when I joked on our preview and post-fight shows, the UFC never wants to make matches that we want to see?
Yeah.
Exhibit A. But Mike, what are your thoughts on Dana might possibly skipping over Rose Wiley right now?
I don't even know if it's – I think money's – I mean, money seems to be part of every – type of conversation like this, but I think it's more impatience. I think they have a date in mind on when they want this fight. And Rose Namajunas isn't the same fighter she was on The Ultimate Fighter. She's very clear-headed, very goal-oriented. She doesn't just make decisions on a whim. She likes to analyze and interpret everything that she does. And I don't see anything wrong with that. What's more interesting about this whole situation is that Zhang Weili, Carla Esparza, and Rose Namajunas are all represented by the same manager. They all have the same manager. So negotiations is super fun. I would love to kind of be in the room and see what the conversations are like, since it's the same management company for three of the four fighters involved here. But I feel like at the end of the day, Rose Namajunas will end up getting the title shot, because I just feel like it's a bigger fight. I'm not defaming Carla Esparza here, because I think that she's done enough to earn an opportunity at this point, especially after everything going on. I still think Carla needs one more win. I would like to see her fight Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I think that's a rematch that I kind of want to see again in 2020. First fight was a beating, but I feel if Carla, for her to get back there and actually like officially earn that shot, I think if she beats Joanna, it's a no-brainer. It's no doubt kind of a situation, and people can move on from this. Well, she's only lucky because one extra judge gave her a round and won her the fight.
I like all those ideas. I also like the idea of Carla fighting Yan Xiaonan for number one contender, maybe on the undercard of a Rose Wiley, so they're all in the same time frame. And then if Joanna really wants to come back soon, she could fight Sif Amanda Ribas wins. Amanda seems to be kind of on the up and up to it. Strawweight, I think they really wanted to fast track her in terms of title fight. But if Rose and Jan and everyone else is holding up the picture, Joanna Amanda Ribas is awesome too. That is a huge clash of personalities, especially in terms of media and hype and everything. But I think they're very genuine people. What you see is what you get all the time. So I wouldn't hate that either. But strawweight rules. That's the end of the story. It is by far the most stacked division of women's MMA.
I felt like when Dana mentioned this about the Esparza Weili fight, I thought it brought me back to when Sarge Eubanks was going to be the main event against Valentin. Like, no one believed it, but it was clearly a threat, you know.
They booked that fight, didn't they? Sign contracts?
It was booked. It was a signed contract. But what does that mean?
And then Sajar ended up fighting in MSG anyway and missed weight.
Yeah. Oh, good time.
Bummer.
Thank you very much, Sandy fam. All right, go back to some Twitter comments.
Boom. From longtime commenter Trumbo, co-main for Connor v. Dustin. Dustin v. Connor, Dustin's ranked higher. Co-main event for this event is currently listed as I versus Calderwood. Well, not a bad fight on its own. Certainly falls short for a co-main event of a huge pay-per-view card. You think they are still working on this card? Because besides the main event, it's pretty thin name and star-wise, so do you think this is more likely that what we'll see going into the future for cards with high-profile main events, similar to boxing cards, and the people buy it mostly only for the main event? Is this going to be the trend in 2021 as fallout from UFC parting ways with old and more established veterans of the sport? This question is very reminiscent of the last time Connor fought. When Connor fought Cowboy, the co-main event was Holly versus Raquel, right?
Yeah.
was that the original main co-main event though? Did something fall out or did that get moved around?
No, that was original main. That was original co-main. That was always the original co-main. Yeah, actually, on that card, pre-pandemic, there were you know, in Tapology when they have all the fights fell out. There's almost nothing on it. It's like that card was actually has booked, and now the you know, those are longer than the actual card itself. The cancellation.
This is going to be the trend, I think, with Conor fights because A, it's going to sell well no matter what. So you don't need to stack the card and get all these eyeballs on these up and coming fighters. But like UFC 229 was absolutely stacked. That was Habib Conor. UFC 205 is probably one of the most stacked cards in the history of the UFC. That was the first MSG card. UFC 202, I think, was thin on paper outside of the top two fights, but it ended up being amazing because we like Cody Garbrandt was on that card. Who else? There was a lot of that. Was the Matt Brown? Was Matt Brown on that? No, Donald Cerrone, Patrick Cote was on that card. The co-main event was Ron Glover. So these cards end up being really good in the long run. So, but this is going to be the trend with Conor. Correct me if I'm wrong, though, Mike.
Probably. I mean, but still, it's kind of like the first question we got. We still have the looming Michael Chandler factor. Like we assume he's going to be on this card somewhere, whether it's Dan Hooker, whether it's Justin Gaethje, whether it's Paul Felder. I mean, who knows? RDA. Whether it's somebody at 155 or could be RDA. I think they're going to do everything in their power to get Chandler on this card and put him in the co-main event slot. And again, nothing wrong with Jessica Eye versus Joanne Calderwood being the co-main event. I mean, this is a good card. You got Rodriguez and Hibas. You got Shane Burgos and Duadu. It's still a pretty good card. I mean, it's not like gangbusters across the board, but Bellator, this is one thing that Bellator always needed to do better. And they have done better over the years is you put this main event that creates all of this buzz, but then you don't set it up so that like your younger talented fighters that you're trying to put over, get that spotlight showed on them. And I feel like the UFC's actually done a pretty good job of this with Conor fights and giving these guys opportunities to grow and establish. Like, it's huge for Brian Kelleher. I mean, look at Brian Kelleher. Awesome. He wasn't supposed to be on the main card of that January card, but he got up there because there was an injury or somebody falling out.
It was the crystal.
It was the crystal. That's right. And then he gets the submission, saves his job. And a lot of he got a lot of buzz out of that. So I feel like some of these fighters can get that same rub with this whole thing, but who knows? I mean, Chandler's still a factor. Just how he factors in, we don't really know just yet.
Well said.
How many pay-per-views did Conor claim was sold when he fought Donald Cerrone?
1.2 million, something like that.
Yeah, I think by the amount of those buys, Conor, the UFC, they can put Conor versus a doorknob, and they can still sell a million pay-per-views. So. While we might get some good prospects on the undercard, it's not going to be any name value. Although I am very excited to see JoJo versus I. But, yeah. I mean, but we're not the fans that make the UFC a billion-dollar company. We're the ones it's that keep – yeah.
Someone mentioned in a tweet to me once, or I saw it on Twitter. I can't quite remember. But it's allegedly these fights are going to have fans. Allegedly, that's what Dana White, like, it's a possibility, Dana White said. They're still trying to figure everything out. Now, if there's no bubble or, like, Dana White's, again, he's trying to figure everything out. He doesn't want people to quarantine for 2 weeks. He wants to do it smart. If there are fans and he gets to do an international fight with all these people, I doubt he wants to put a ton of huge names that could all possibly be a risk. Like, he doesn't want to, like, lose these fights, tie him up. But, like, someone also replied to that and was like, what if Poirier gets COVID? And then the main event is out. Like, that's like, this isn't a pay-per-view card without the main event. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you could do Chandler versus Hooker, maybe, or Chandler versus RDA for an interim title, but like, who wants that? Like, I think they need one more fight on this card just as a precautionary, but I think they should do that for every card moving forward. Like, we saw, like, Hamza and Leon Edwards fell out. That sucked. But then when Thompson and Jeff Neal got bumped up, still a great fight. There's a lot of great fights you could elevate on that card. I think they need a backup on all these massive cards moving forward.
That card had like 27 fights on it at one point.
Yeah, I know.
It was crazy.
I remember we were doing a preview or post fight show or something, and they were rebooking all these fights, and they were like, and I was like, you think half these fights are even going to happen? Like, it's just, it's written in the stars. You get 20 fights on a card, you're going to end up with 10 by the time fight night comes around. And four of them are going to fall out the day of the fight.
I think that's true.
I have a long little Twitter thread of all the canceled fights from the last 3 weeks. It's getting ridiculous.
Mateus Nicolau is on UFC 257, right?
Against the Far dreaded away? TBD. Yeah, against TBD.
Yeah. So they re-signed. Wasn't he in Brave, right? He was supposed to be in that flyaway tournament with Shorty.
Yep.
Man, they just do not want to re-sign Shorty.
Oh, I know. What a bummer. Yeah, I know. Speaking of, oh man, I don't want to. Here, we'll talk about the big fight booking that was announced yesterday.
Oh God.
Joseph Bozo, okay. Captain Mike Jackson, Dean Barry, meeting in the welterweight division at UFC Fight Night 185, Edwards versus Chimaev. I swore Jackson was cut. Yeah, you know why? Because Dana White said he'll never get a fight, but Dana White says a lot of things that don't happen. So yeah, Mike Jackson's back. They really just wanted someone to fight on Fight Island. Mike Jackson, fellow MMA media member, who was the only one of only two. Mike, were you on the site for UFC 247 yet? That was John Jones and Reyes.
I was not there for that one, no.
So for that one, that was like one of the last few pen. That was the last non-Vegas card in the United States before the pandemic really happens for a pay-per-view. And in the post-fight press conference, while we were killing time, I was walking around interviewing media members on how they scored the main event. And Mike Jackson, I think, had it four rounds to one, John Jones. And I was like, what in the world? Where'd you get that score from? And then he was the only one. So, yeah, fellow MMA media member, maybe he wants to go cover Fight Island. So, but, yeah, he's back. What do you think of the return of the truth, Mike Jackson, Mike Heck?
Why not? I dig it. Listen, let's call this for what it is. There is a lot of excitement surrounding an electric guy, unbelievable kickboxer. The dude is legit. And when he got signed to the UFC, I was like, wow, like this is a Bellator type of signing. Like they're jumping on this guy quick so that Bellator doesn't pick him up. And I totally understood why, because this guy is really good. Owen Roddy is a striking coach. I mean, the guy has so much potential. It's unbelievable. But we have to showcase that. You can't put him in there with Tyron Woodley right now or, you know, anybody at 55. So this one's going to be at 70. I think it's a good test for him. And Mike's, you know, Mike is what it is. Like he gets an opportunity and what's he going to do? Say no. Of course he's going to get it. Yeah. When I found out about this fight yesterday, I was told by a source, I was actually texted, Dean Barry's fighting Mike Jackson on January 20th. I'm like, Mike the Truth Jackson? And he said, yes. And I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. So here we are. This is 2021. Good opportunity. MMA, and you can't sleep on anybody. And Mike Jackson has been in this game, whether covering it or actually competing in some form of combat sports for quite some time now. So why not? Interesting. It's got people talking, that's for sure.
Yeah, people are, I don't want to say excited, but at least they know him. He's clearly one, like, he's more popular than fighters that are ranked, if people remember him. More popular than Dean Barry.
Sure. More popular than Dean Barry. Mike Jackson is the A-side on that fight. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you're not wrong. He fought at, was it 225 or 239?
That was the last
or
one,
238.
Yeah.
225, so that was Chicago, Whitaker, right? Romero, too. Yeah, when he fought CM Punk. That was one of my Alex and I's fan side days. I think, Mike, you were a fan side too then.
I was. That was, there was Mike Jackson's UFC debut was against Mickey Gall. And the winner was going to fight CM. It was the battle to who's going to fight CM Punk first.
I talked to Mike Jackson a lot that week because, like, interviews, and then he came into the fan side of the office for a thing. And he was saying before that Mickey Gall fight, he was pretty much primarily going in the direction of boxing as his career. So he hadn't grappled. Yep. He hadn't kicked. He hadn't done Muay Thai in a long time. And then he signed to fight Mickey Gall. It got pieced up. He said after that fight, in preparation for CM Punk, he actually had a full MMA camp. So he was actually training. So he's like, people who think that this clown's going to submit me, I think those are his exact words, are full of it, because I'm going to run through this guy. So he talked me into it. He talked me into it, but still no word from CM Punk about if he's coming back anytime soon.
He's a good dude. Like, Mike's actually a really nice guy, and I'm actually very happy for Mike. I've known him for a while. I remember after the CM Punk fight, Daniel Bryan from the WWE like called him out for a fight. It was like WWE versus UFC kind of a thing, and that was like a huge deal. It's just good for Mike, man. Like, I'm happy to see him get this opportunity.
He was he also, as you know, like, he has like the Black Power fist and everything on his chest and everything, and that was the week the Eagles were uninvited to the White House. So he had a lot of things to say about that.
Yeah.
Him and him and CM Punk. Anyway, good luck to Mike Jackson and Dean Barry. I'm excited for both those guys.
And the cool part about Mike Jackson fighting on that card, he fights the fight, and then he stays next couple of days, and he gets to watch Connor Dustin in the media tent.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Get those good views, son.
Good photographer, too.
Yeah.
Really good.
Very good photographer.
And he would have been just – well, who was the last fighter to honestly be cut off a win? I really –
Gerald Harris.
Cut or not, I guess not re-signed, or was he?
No, I think they cut him.
Can you cut someone on a win? Like, I guess, you know what? I guess Mike, he hasn't done any, has he done any interviews yet?
Like, no, he's talking to, I believe he's going to be speaking with our own Damon Martin sometime today.
Very interested. Like, you know, was he just owed this fight, or did he, like, I don't know how it works. I wonder if it's one of those situations, like, remember Mark Hunt, where like the UFC, the original fight when we had the Pride contract, where they just tried to buy him out, but he's like, no, I want to fight.
I want to. Yeah. That UFC 225.
I just compared Mike Jackson to Mark Hunt, though. That's
Dan Ige was the opening fight on the entire card at UFC 225, and then a young Charles Oliveira was the next fight, and then a young Sergio Pettis beat Joe B, and then Anthony Smith crushed Rashad Evans. Those were all on the Fight Pass prelims.
So crazy looking back at some of those old cards, like and seeing some name on the prelims.
The Fight Pass prelims of that card, I'm looking at it, is just blows the actual Fox Sports 1 prelim out of the water. We had Chris De La Rocha, who I don't even think is in the UFC anymore. Bechtig is on a little bit of a slide, and then Claudia and Curtis Blades are great. But like the UFC Fight Pass prelims ruled, and then the main card was awesome too. Anyway, thank you for the question, Joseph Boza.
Maybe this is the other fight that was announced yesterday.
Nina Ants is from Roberto Barrientos. Apologies if I mispronounce your name. Is Nina Ansaroff a step too big for Dern? First of all, speaking of Chicago fight cards, UFC 238 was the last time Nina Ansaroff fought. What if I told you that Nina Ansaroff would lose on that card, have a baby, and return before Tatiana Suarez, who also fought on that card?
Aww.
That is just an absolute bummer. I know our own Alex Avis is like the president of the Tatiana Suarez fan club. The fact that we're having all these conversations about the women's strawweight title and she can't be involved right now because of her neck is an absolute bummer, because I thought she'd be champion by now. But you can't mess around with an injured neck. But Casey, I'll start with you. Is Nina Ansaroff a step too big for Mackenzie Dern, who's coming off the win over Jandiroba and has been pretty active in 2020? I think people don't realize.
No, this feels right. And if I'm Mackenzie Dern, this is it sounds mean, but this is a good opportunity to fight Ansaroff. She has the big layoff. She made a baby, you know, and so there's a lot going on in her life. So will this Nina Ansaroff be, you know, the same one, you know, a year ago?
Just real quick, someone in the YouTube comments says Ansaroff versus Dern for the baddest mother.
Just the baddest mother.
I like it. I like that. That's funny.
Would this be the highest ranking mom fight?
Yeah.
It's got to be. It's up there. Yeah.
Probably.
Have any moms been UFC champions yet?
No, there's been no mom champ. Michelle Waterson wanted to be the first mom champ.
Okay.
So Casagrande almost obviously
off of the title, but yeah, lost. Yeah. So we've had moms fight for the title, but yeah. No mom has won the title. Okay. Interesting.
Lauren Murphy's, of course, close too, but she hasn't got that fight yet. So in terms of high ranked fight, like, what about Andrea Lee and Lauren Murphy when they fought? They're both moms. They're both high ranked. They were on that Houston card.
You're right. Yeah.
But neither was in the top five at the time.
Yeah. So Ansaroff and Dern are outside the top five too. But just a big mom fight. Yeah, baddest moms. But back to the actual question. No, this feels right. And if I think we're all slightly surprised but excited to see Nina Ansaroff back so soon. But if she says she's ready, and this, you know, obviously she has a couple more months for this fight. Yeah, super cool. I'm excited.
Do we technically have a mom champ right now, though?
Oh, yeah. Well.
Is Amanda Nunes? Can we consider Amanda Nunes as a mom champ?
She's a mother, but she didn't have all the right baby, though.
Fair play. I just wanted to clarify, because I know people are going to talk about that. Anyway, thank you for the question, Roberto. From D'Angelo Pompilio on Twitter, did Jose Aldo show everyone how to get around the sponsorship ban with that sticker? Is he a pioneer, or will he be made an example of? He is not a pioneer, because Casey, you've watched millions of fights. Mike, you've watched millions of fights. Even now on the regional circuit, you know what happens at KSW. You know what happens in Russia all the time. How many times have we seen temporary stickers on these fighters, especially their back? I'm pretty sure if you watch the old TKO fights on George St. Pierre's early days, he has stickers all over, like on his chest or his back, and they all rub off. And remember San Alvi did the spray tan on his chest too? So I think for fighter fans that are relatively new to the sport or don't watch a lot of the regional scene, they might say that, but no, not a pioneer. If anything, he's bringing it back.
Yeah. Was it a sticker or was it a tattoo, a temporary tattoo that rubbed off?
Not sure.
Not sure. Yeah, interesting.
But it was like the Brazil Navy flag or whatever.
People were talking about it.
I'm actually kind of bummed it wasn't a straight up sponsor. I'm bummed it wasn't some energy drink.
I'm bummed that wasn't a tattoo, because that wasn't. I'm like, I'm like, that tattoo is so well done. If that's a real tattoo, that looks like a sticker. And then lo and behold. Lo and behold. From Terrence Leverett on Twitter, another longtime commenter. Which event this year you had the opportunity to cover in person this year? Also, which fight would you like to cover next year if you had the choose to pick one?
I think he's missing.
Thanks for the great coverage this year while I worked from home. So I'm assuming which event was your favorite that you had the opportunity to cover?
Yeah.
Which event next year do you want to?
Uh-oh. We were waiting for it. Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Damn it. So now I have to.
You got to host. Are you hosting? This is your day off, too, and you're hosting again.
Oh, man. All right. So Casey, let me just say I have not covered a single event in 2020, not a one on location. The last event I covered live was UFC 244 in New York. That was the last one that I was live for. So Casey, you've covered a few, you covered all the pre-pandemic events, and I think you covered maybe two or three post-pandemic
just
events.
Two. I just covered two. I covered one pay-per-view. I covered Stipe DC 3 and Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier.
What was your favorite of all the ones you covered this year?
Oh, I was at 248. I mean, I thought that was awesome. We actually did Jose, who was here a moment ago before his computer exploded. we had the privilege of doing a nice sit down 45-minute interview. Here we go. 45-minute interview with Mr. Adesanya in his hotel room. Oh,
hey,
am I back?
You're back.
So,
for those, I probably sound a lot worse too, because for those that aren't part of the MMA fighting team, we get our work computers that are forced to update at certain times. And mine decided it needed to update right now. My whole computer just turned off. So my microphone and my HD streaming camera are unusable for the next 47 minutes while my computer decides to update. So what did I miss?
Let's ask our new host, Mike Heck.
I was asking Casey what his favorite event to cover this year was, and he said 248, because you guys had that sit down with Adesanya for 45 minutes or so. That was his favorite. I guess Jose's updates might be coming to a close pretty soon, judging by that sound.
Nope, it's 48 minutes. It just restarted. What a bizarre anyway.
Oh man.
So can you guys even hear me right now?
It's a little hollow, but we can hear you. We got you.
Yeah, because I have to use this thing still, so sorry about that, everyone. Mike, you didn't get to cover any events this year, right?
Nope. Last one I covered was 244. Oh, man.
But Mike, have you interviewed more fighters this year than ever before? Maybe not, because it's a little different now. Yeah, because so you have at least five a week, you know, 5 a week for the last 30 weeks.
I would say I interviewed more fighters last year than I did this year.
Okay,
just because like that's all I did last year was just interview fighters, but it was more. I mean, I was interviewing like regional fighters, amateurs, pros, all different promotions. So I would say quantity was more than quality last year. I don't know if that's fair, but I definitely interviewed more fighters last year. But it is funny that like a good chunk of those fighters got into the UFC this year. So it was kind of good to set the table in that way.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the way you feel when you talk about, you know, you see the guys on the regional circuit, you know, now you see, you know, in the big show making some decent coin. Like I felt the same way, like when I was at all the early Invicta shows. Like I was at Tisha Torres's first fight, I was at Jojo Calderwood's first, you know, domestic American fight, Carla Esparza before she was Carla Esparza, you know what I mean? Like I just saw, so I totally get that, like, oh, you know, you're happy for him.
Yeah, I interviewed Shorty Torres for the first time before his pro debut. Like,
wow.
Before, like, it was crazy. And then to see him get to the UFC, like, that's one of the ones that, like, stuck out to me. Because I remembered he was fighting for Titan FC at the time, and their PR rep was like, you got to interview this guy. I know he's got no pro fights, but interview this guy. I'm telling you, you're going to be blown away by him. And I was like, all right. And then I interviewed him, and I was like, right. Blew me away indeed.
I remember when Mike and I worked at Fanside, I'm pretty sure we were one of the ones that broke Shorty signing with the UFC, because he got that last minute fight in Utica, which I went to because we had plans to shoot some sort of embedded style thing like you did with Alima in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Casey, the fight was like 11, 12 days notice, and he was bulking up to fight at 145 and then had to cut down to 125. So he just physically was not up to it when we got there. But that was the worst I've ever seen him in terms of his, because he's obviously a really good talker. It was hard to get like three words out of him because it looked like he was about to pass out at every point of the day.
Oh, weight cutting.
Anyway,
that was a fight between two of the more underrated talkers in the sport. Like Shorty's obviously great. Jared Brooks is excellent too. And that's another guy who should probably be back at the UFC. But it's not. It's just, it's crazy.
The monkey god?
Yes.
Is that his name? Yeah.
Yep.
But to answer Mr. Terrence Leverett's question, because I have 249, probably, the first Jacksonville pay-per-view. The Tony Gaethje one. Because that one was just, that was the first pandemic card, and that fight ruled, and I sat octagon side for it. So just the sounds, I'll never forget the sounds of that fight, being like 10 feet away from it. And when Justin Gaethje got the worst low blow I've ever heard, but only because there was no one there, so just echoed, and the cries of agony from a low blow I'll never forget.
I hate covering. Covering pandemic fights. What kind of like how, with all the protocols? It's a good experience, but overall it sucks compared to a normal fight week. Would you say so?
You know what else sucks? Spending 5 weeks in Abu Dhabi. That was a grind, by the way.
Oh, dude, I was worried about everyone's like mental health there. You know, you guys, the staff, just like
Oscar and I were talking about this when I was up in Las Vegas last. Like by week four, we would see each other, and be like, "Hey, one more week to go." And then by the time Khabib fight week came around, we were all back into it. But like you go through that, it's like fun, it's interesting, and then by like the middle of week three, you just know the routine and there's nothing to do. And then once the Khabib fight came around, it was awesome. The Adesanya Costa fight week was a lot of fun though, mostly because I got that interview with the City Kickboxing guys. Now that where they just seemed to have fun. Izzy, it seemed all hat for them, but the fact that like Kai, Riddell and Shane got the shine too. Like they were excited for the interview, and then Blood Diamond, and then Carlos Olberg, who's now in the UFC.
Yep, Olberg.
I interviewed him 5 weeks before his Contender Series fight, and during the thing, he goes, "I'm just ready right now if they need a Contender Series guy." So yeah, that was probably my favorite of the Abu Dhabi 5 weeks.
Cool. Thank you much. Did we answer everything? Oh no, what was the second part of the question?
Which one do you want to cover next year?
If it's a pandemic card, I will cover it because that's my job. But I mean, they're just not fun to cover. Everything's at a distance. Protocols. It's just, you know, once you go to Abu Dhabi two times, you got it. You know. What are you looking forward to, Jose? An event in general. You know, I'm like, how about the first event where fans are going to be back? That's going to be just weird.
Yeah.
I think that whenever that happens.
We were talking about, like, Oscar and I were talking about that too. We're still going to be nervous.
First time.
Like, we're still like we were talking, like, say where the fans are allowed back in and it's a normal fight week, but you're still only allowed like they want. Because right now, each media outlet is pretty much only allowed one person backstage and then one person that was at Octagon side. So, like, if there was an event in Boston or if there was an event in like Ohio or something like that, like either me or Casey or Alex would probably go, and then like Mike or Damon would sit Octagon side and then the other one would be in the back doing the interviews. I still don't know if I would want to sit in an arena with fans everywhere just yet.
Oh, it's going to – yeah. I don't expect it to happen late 2021, if that – when actually they can the whatever local governments or can deem it safe enough to have an actual arena where everyone can just breathe on each other. What a weird dystopian statement, but that I'm saying now that makes sense. But a year ago, like what? But yeah.
What about you, Mike? What are you excited to cover next year, if possible?
I've never covered a Conor card yet.
Really?
So that would be one. Yeah, that'd be one I'd like to see in person, because I haven't been there for a Conor fight yet.
I'm super curious how a pandemic Conor card will go.
That is interesting.
Because Casey has covered a million of them. I've covered all of them except for 229, because I had just joined fighting, so I hadn't, like, you guys had your routine. It was like 229 is my first pay per view fighting, so I was still the new person, so I didn't get to go. And then I didn't do his Dublin card because I couldn't afford to pay for myself to go to that one. But the media turnout is insane, and some media that don't cover MMA are so rude, and they just think they can push in front of you and knock over everything, start asking questions before everyone's ready. It's very much like boxing media. Casey, you've covered boxing.
Yeah,
boxing media and MMA media are night and day in terms of just manners. But Casey, you've been to events now where like they have name tags everywhere. You each get your own mic. There's no pushing. You don't have to get there super early to get a good spot. I am very curious if that continues with a Conor card.
During a pandemic? I mean, during with the current protocols? I mean, I would think they have to.
Yeah.
I mean, they have. I mean,
I agree.
I mean, Esther, she just came back from San Antonio, and she worked on the Canelo fight, the Canelo card in San Antonio, and so which would normally be, it's not the same. It's not the same as Conor hype, but it's up there, you know, especially with international media. And
oh yeah,
she was just like, no, but pandemic protocols override everything. You know, I mean, it can get a little crowded and a little rude, you know, people going, hey, I should be over there. I need to get closer. But for the most part, it's pandemic protocols control, rule everything before the status of the fight, how big it is. So, but yeah, I would love to see Conor in an empty arena walk out with no fans and just to hear his music playing just for the people in the arena. I mean, for the 30 people in the whatever the fight spear, fight dome, whatever, fight hanger. I don't know what they call it. Thing. Yeah, that I wouldn't mind covering that fight though, just to have that experience because yeah. I was at UFC Dublin, the Conor fight where he fought Diego Brandão, and even though I was at all the other big Conor pay per views, that by far was the best one as far as just like the crowd, the intensity, and at that point Conor was still Conor. Conor was a hero. There was no, you know, bus incident. There was no allegations. There was no brawls. It was just Conor on his ride. So everything was rosy then. So,
and that was just a magical night for Irish MMA in general.
Absolutely.
Because they all won.
They all won big, too. Yep. Man, what a card. Cool.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out. Yeah.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Okay. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Four Corners Sports, NY on Twitter. What are your thoughts of the three cards for Fight Island that Dana announced, and which card, as well as which main event, are you most looking forward to, and why? I think we just answered this in the last question. I think we're all at least fascinated by the idea of Conor fighting on a pandemic card. The other main event is Leon Edwards and Khamzat, and then the other main event is Max Holloway, Calvin Kattar. All awesome fights. Calvin Kattar, of course, representing New England over in Abu Dhabi. Max Holloway. I think it's weird that their fight two. U.S. fighters are fighting in the main event of Fight Island, but whatever, it is what it is. Mike, what are you most looking forward to of the three cards?
Obviously Conor Poirier is super fascinating, but and I love me Calvin Kattar versus Max Hall, or excuse me, Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar, higher ranked fighter first, pal.
Mm-hmm.
But Leon Edwards versus Khamzat Chimaev, man. Like I just have to see it. Like we missed out on it December 19th. It is such a fascinating fight. And I am responsible for writing the breakout fighter of the year for MMA fighting. And I got to wax poetically on the winner a little bit. I mean, one of the nominees, because obviously Chimaev's going to be in this conversation. But the fact that he's fighting Leon Edwards in his fourth UFC fight is just so crazy to me. And we're finally going to see it, hopefully on January 20th, headlining that card, sandwiched in between Kattar Holloway and McGregor versus Poirier. Man, oh man, I am fired up. That's such a fascinating fight. I cannot wait to see the result of that and where it sends this division moving forward.
I agree. Because this is going to be make or break for Chimaev, obviously, and Leon Edwards. If Leon Edwards doesn't look great against like an unranked fighter, like, I mean, I give Mike a little bit of a pass because we just had COVID and he's been off for like more than a year. So give him a little bit of a pass, but it's not going to look great on his resume. Casey, what do you look most looking forward to?
I love all three of those main events. I really do. I love them all because every single one of those fights have extremely high stakes. and they're not just fights. I mean, like Wonder Boy Neil was a great fight. It's two guys who wanted to see punch each other, but the high stakes weren't there outside of the physical beating they were going to get. But this one, yeah, there's so much in line for Holloway. There's so much in line for Cater. So much in line for every single fighter. And the only thing that can make it better is not necessarily that he deserves it, but I think Conor versus Poirier versus McGregor should be for the vacant 155 title. Not that I think Conor deserves it, but I think that belt is vacated. Habib retired, so that belt should be vacated, and Dustin Poirier should have the opportunity to fight for that title. So I'm super excited about
the idea of that fight being a number one contender fight for a vacant title, or at least like an opening of a tournament,
or a part of a tournament. Either way, yeah.
Yeah.
I just hate the idea.
Someone presented the idea of if that's the opening of the tournament, but it's still a title fight, so it's like Bellator where the title is part of, like, follows a fighter through. Don't hate that idea either, because at the end, if Conor wins the tournament, you can't argue he doesn't have to be champ, you know, the winner of the tournament. So don't hate it either way, but I'm excited for Conor to get back in there. Excited for Poirier to get back in there, and for the Good Fight Foundation to get a whole bunch of money, more importantly.
Yay.
But
taking out any title stuff, I do feel like I am a sucker. I did fall for it, but like I am into Shamaya versus Edwards. I hate that booking, but I love the chaos of it and the chaos that it can create, you know, in terms of rankings. And all of a sudden, an unranked guy is now number three. A guy who was ranked number three, maybe he's not even top 10. You know, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you just like is Leon Edwards is even any good? You know. I'm sorry?
Has anyone had a faster rise? Cody Garbrandt's the only one I can think of. He fought Dominic Cruz after like a year.
Before
fighting Cruz?
I would say within the UFC, this could be the fastest rise outside of Anderson Silva. Within the UFC, not counting outside. Because Anderson Silva was...
And Anderson was Anderson still.
Yeah, that's a problem. It doesn't really count.
Because I was a huge mark for Anderson and Pride, and when he joined the UFC, I wanted him to fight Rich Franklin right away.
I didn't think
he needed a leave-in fight. But what, it ended up working out because he looked so well. So he performed so well, it just made that fight bigger, which is great. But, yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anyone that's gotten this fast of a treatment.
You know, like when Eddie Alvarez came to the UFC, if he wanted, like, just dusted Cowboy in his first fight, I'm sure his next fight would have been for the title, but obviously he lost that fight.
100%.
But as far as coming into the UFC completely unknown, like being just a regional fighter, I can't think of a fighter coming up the ladder.
He was the last minute replacement.
You know who is also a last minute replacement? That's now one of the all time greats, Valentina Shevchenko.
Yep.
She came on like 2 weeks notice.
Kaufman.
Yeah, dude.
So Cody was 5-0 when he fought for the title.
Okay.
He debuted in January of 2015, and he fought Dominic Cruz in December of 2016.
When you say debut, you mean UFC debut or MMA debut?
Yeah. UFC debut.
Oh, UFC debut. Okay.
So he was 5-0. He fought Marcus Brimage in his first UFC fight. You know who else? If Brandon Royval beat Brandon Moreno, he could have been the answer to this question.
I agree.
So.
Cool, cool. Thank you for your question. I like that question. Sammy?
For another question from Four Corner Sports, what did you learn about Chaos Williams after... Hey, don't tag me.
I know he tagged him.
What did you learn about Chaos Williams after his fight against Michelle Pineda? Rude. Who do you want Chaos to fight next? We had a similar question on the post fight show, if I'm not mistaken. So, Mike, you were the host of that, and you did answer the next one, obviously. But for those of our listeners who missed the post fight show, or miss on to the next one, or miss both, what's next for both Chaos and Michelle Pineda?
To kind of address the first question, I think we learned that Chaos can fight beyond 30 seconds, because I think that was a big question that people had heading into that fight. a lot of people also felt that Chaos Williams won that fight. So it is what it is. I don't think he lost a lot of steam. We kind of had these extreme expectations when we were talking about, as soon as Chaos and Pajedo was booked, we were just like, oh my God, this is really happening. And we just had these high expectations, and it just became more of a technical fight. So I don't think we learned a whole lot more from that fight. I think we learned outset that he could fight for 30 seconds. As far as what I'd like to see next for Chaos, I'd like to see him, and this is solely depending on the recovery of this man, I want to see Chaos fight Brian Barberina and just let those two throw hams and have some fun in there. He's a veteran. He's been in the UFC for a long time. He's been a part of some crazy fights in his career. I'd like to see him match up against a guy that is so super durable and can take a big shot and see how he plays out. Pajeda, I mean, there's a lot of options for him right now. I'd like to see him get a step up, someone like inside the top 20. But give Chaos a veteran who's willing to scrap, and then Pajeda, let's see what he can do. Throw him into some deeper waters and see what happens.
Casey, what say you?
What did I learn about them? Actually, I learned that Chaos is actually a better fighter than... I didn't learn too much. I think they're both very talented fighters, and the fight was super close. It was one of those fights, because it was so competitive, it kind of made it, you know, boring. It didn't make it the crazy fight of the year that we thought it was going to be, because it was competitive, because these guys are actually good fighters, and because they respected the other guy across the cage from them, because they didn't want to get knocked out, you know. So they both had to fight smart. So actually, I even though it wasn't the fight of the year that we thought it was going to be, or fight of the night, you know, I thought we learned that they were actually just smart, well-rounded fighters. Actually, for Chaos though, next. Yeah, I think what Mike said, just like a vet. I like that. I would love Robbie Lawler to fight either of these guys, either one. I think you can go wrong with either way.
Why not Michelle Pineda? I'd like to see him fight Nicholas Dalby or Tim Means, because they're both coming off wins, like big wins in their career, and they're both veterans who have seen everything. And then Chaos Williams, I want to fight Daniel Rodriguez, just because that's super violent.
I agree. I think both these guys, I think you can, it's really hard to, it's kind of hard to mess with the matchmaking of these guys, to be honest.
I agree.
Yeah.
Also, because
I like the Tim Means fight.
I like Tim Means a lot too.
We talk about the top of the welterweight division being so hyper competitive, but I feel like the talent between, like, say, 8 and 30. You can match up any of those guys and they'll fun. Like, welterweight is like sneaky stacked outside the top 15. There's a lot of fun fighters up there.
I agree.
Cool. Thank you much.
What time is it? I can't even see my clock.
We just went over an hour. We just went over an hour. Let's do some. Let me go to the YouTube comments and see if let me get a couple more in here.
From Anid Saranga, apologies if I mispronounce your name. Do you guys think if Charles is able to equal Habib's winning streak, he'll entice Habib to come back? I think it's a tough question.
I think Mike is
Habib. It's a tough question. What do you say, Mike?
Mike is ready. Mike's got it.
I think I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no, though. I think obviously the GSP fight is the one that's been thrown around a lot. But if it's not GSP, there, I think honestly, there's only one guy that can get Habib back, and it is Charles Oliveira. If he can go on in this insane run, maybe win the vacant title and go on a streak as impressive as Habib's, like if he wins 14 in a row overall, if he wins 4 or 5 more fights in a row, there's a chance that I think Habib would come back and be like, no, 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 son. That's my record. You're not breaking it. So outside of GSP, I think Oliveira is the one guy that might be able to entice Habib to come back just because of the competitive nature of it. But outside of that, I don't see it happening.
I was going to say if there's one name that might bring him back, it might be Charles, also solely because he's already said, like, he's already tapped out Poirier. He's already tapped out Connor. He's already beaten Gaethje. Like, Tony's lost. Like, he's beaten everyone. There's no one else for him to beat. And if Charles goes on this, if Charles Oliveira had won, gone on the mic, called out Islam Makhachev, goes out there and beat Islam Makhachev, man, I bet Khabib would have fought him. But you don't know. No one knows. Anyway, Casey, what do you think?
No. No. Just, no.
If on a scale of 1 to 100, it is like 95% sure Khabib's retired. But if there's that 5%, Charles could be one of them just because Khabib hasn't fought him.
If Charles never had those issues at 45 and he was an undefeated lightweight and he was encroaching on that pound for pound best ever list, maybe. But I think Khabib's one of those guys like, oh, cool. Good for him. And yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, it's nice to think about. It's like, yeah, I mean, I know we're already missing Khabib, you know, but yeah.
From Mareld Clegg, where does Greg Hardy go from here? Outside the top 20 in terms of an ex opponent. I don't know. They're not going to cut him. If you don't want, I know a lot of our followers aren't, they don't follow up, American sports, but Greg Hardy is a name, that people recognize, good and bad. They either remember him from being the football player or they remember him from the awful headlines that he was involved in during his NFL career. So they're not cutting him, but he obviously needs a drastic step down in competition in terms of talent. Mike, what do you say?
There's two ways you go with this. One, you throw him to a guy like a Parker Porter, something in that realm, because I think the UFC kind of sees something in Parker Porter. But they also see something in Greg. It's a step back. It's a fun fight. And Parker's going to get right in his face and throw bombs. And then the other option is you give him a guy like a Tanner Bozier, who's on the cusp of taking that next step towards the top 15, who's coming off a loss to Andrei Arlovsky, that's looking to get back against a recognizable name. So I anywhere in between those guys is fine too. But yeah, we're not throwing him into a top 15 or a top 20 matchup. It's either you take a giant step back or you take a partial step back. There's just no in between. You can make arguments for both. But I'd like to see Greg take a giant step back and just see what he has. Parker's a tough dude. If Parker Porter can get to the second round with Greg Hardy, that's an interesting fight to me. And Tanner Bozier would be all over a matchup like that. So something like that. Give him a step back for sure, though.
Casey, what say you?
I love Greg Hardy versus Tanner Bozier. Bozier, am I saying right? Yeah. Yep. I think the UFC likes Tanner Bozier. He fights for much cheaper than Greg Hardy does. I think Greg Hardy is for his ranking, for how good he is, how good his potential is. I think he is very expensive. And I know the UFC paid him a lot of money at the beginning because I know Dana thought Greg Hardy was going to be this top five, title contender eventually. Man, but what I saw, was that 2 weeks ago or last? Was that this? When was that fight?
Last week.
Yeah, sorry. We have so many cards. Last week. Yeah, it was so long ago now. That was one that, honestly, yeah, I get Greg Hardy can kick my ass, man, but in terms of UFC heavyweights, that was a very, very, very bad performance. The way he just you look great one round, cool, but you still didn't drop Tiberio, you 10-8 him, you won the round, but man, to see someone's gas tank just that much, and then when it goes to the ground, even worse. If that was not Greg Hardy, you're not going, oh, I want to see that guy fight again. Just no way. So, I think Greg Hardy's next fight, we talk about crossroads fights. Holy crap, he has to win the next fight, I think. It's so important. Because all his, weird little losses, they're, illegal illegal knees. What was that? Didn't he get DQ'd once?
Asthma.
Well, he had asthma.
He was DQ'd for the illegal knee, and then it was a no contest because he used the inhaler.
Yeah, even all his wins were kind of, they all seem weird. Juan Adams?
Yeah.
Just grabbing his leg. It was just Yeah, and that was just like, okay, so we finally got the loss. The Greg Hardy, like, he just lost bad. So whatever his next fight is, man, if he loses that next fight, I just don't understand the UFC paying what he is, paying the amount he gets to keep him around. So I think it's such an important fight for him.
Who do you think wins a long distance race between Shane Carwin and Greg Hardy?
Long distance, talking 80 yards, like 240s in a row.
Who runs 5 miles? Who runs a 5K? Who wins a 5K between Greg Hardy and Shane Carwin?
In 5K, like in a row? Like he's like, oh, man.
A 5K race, a fun run for charity. Yeah, see, that's tough.
That's a good question.
Shane Carwin will win an MMA fight 10 out of 10 times. But, man, those, like, I was trying to, like, when I was watching that fight, I'm like, I feel like there's a heavyweight out there that I'd seen this before. It's Shane Carwin. When he fought Brock Lesnar, and he was just dead after the first round.
But as much as I want to see Greg Hardy versus Tanner Boser, I think that's a really bad fight for Hardy. So I think all Hardy has, especially in that first round, he'll have speed. And I got guys like Boser, I don't necessarily know how much faster he'll be than Boser. And Boser, I mean, you know what you're gonna get from Greg Hardy. Survive that first round, and then use your mixed martial arts, your full skill set, and beat him in the second round. But if I'm Greg Hardy, I try to find a big, slow heavyweight. Oh, let's talk about this. Before we jet.
Update from Joseph Boser. With Anthony Pettis testing for agency. Connor's now ranked number 15 at welterweight. Thoughts? I have no thoughts.
Let's talk about Anthony Pettis.
I have no thoughts on this.
How about Anthony Pettis?
Talk about Conor McGregor falling from number one pound for pound in the world to 30 minutes later being outside the top 10. Man, what a drastic fall. That was a bug.
I feel like.
Anyway, yeah, Anthony Pettis is. Go ahead.
No, I feel like that happens once a month. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like those, I'll go on UFC.com and be like, what? Like, how is this a thing?
So Anthony Pettis announced yesterday he's going to test the free agency, test the open market. He is parting ways with UFC after 12 years. I think Mike and I, you said it a few times, like especially on the post-fight show, like his bags are packed. Like he can say he wants to fight Tony. He can say he wants to get back to the belt and all this. His bags are already probably packed and leaving the UFC. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if we see him on Bellator. If PFL gets their act together, maybe he goes for $1 million and then retires. But, yeah, no surprise for me when he made that announcement. But, Mike, what thought?
Oh, I'm with you. It seems like Bellator is like the best option for him. And I mean, just look at the fights we can make there. I mean, Jose, you just the mere mention of a Pettis versus MVP on the post fight show just put the biggest smile on my face. Like, this is real. Like, this could really happen
into my veins.
Yes. And I know he wants to go back to 55, and I feel like 55 is the best place for him. But man, him versus MVP is so much fun. I love it. Him versus Patricky Pitbull, man, that's so much fun. I love that too. But if he goes to PFL, I don't have an issue with that either. Him versus Natan Schott would be so much fun. Like, that's a crazy fight to think about too. So, yeah, he's in a good place right now. And going in there and having a win like that against a guy like Marano, who's tough as nails, and throwing those combinations and getting on the highlight reels and getting on social media clips, that was huge for Anthony Pettis. Because now I feel like his stock is way higher than it was, you know, even coming out of the Cerrone win.
Seems like a calculated move from Anthony Pettis to take specifically the Alex Marano fight. If I'm giving my opinion, but Eric Koch is apparently also no longer with UFC, another Rufus Sport guy. So I said on our Slack channel, it seems like there's an exodus of Rufus Sport's fighters from the UFC. I know there was that weird Tyron Woodley possibly being cut in, but then Tyron Woodley cleared it up later. He's not cut from the UFC. That, like he said it himself, and his manager confirmed. So yeah. Anthony Pettis versus MVP in Bellator would be awesome, but Anthony Pettis versus MVP in Ryzen in a ring would be a lot of fun. Though
Glorious.
That's far less things to jump off of if you're Anthony Pettis. Still a fun fact.
Or maybe there's more, Jose. Maybe there's more. Maybe gets up on that top turnbuckle.
Those ropes do have some spring. Yeah, they do have some spring in there.
A little too cold Scorpio action. I love it.
Yeah, we've seen enough lucha that you can jump pretty far. You can jump pretty high off those ropes. Come on, man.
Anthony Pettis versus like anyone, like Larkin would be fun. Lima would be fun. Patricky Pitbull obviously is a lot of fun. If they want to do their own lightweight tournament after, like their own lightweight Grand Prix, have Patricio vacate, go for 135, because I think Patricio can make 135 and fight Juan Archuleta tomorrow. Well, obviously he's gonna cut weight, but if Patricio wants to vacate because his brother's at 155, and then make that tournament, throw Anthony Pettis in there, I'm all for that. Any of those.
I'm jumping a little ahead.
Kickboxing.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah,
I'm jumping a little.
I was gonna do kickboxing, Muay Thai too. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping a little ahead, but you know, AJ McKee has talked about, you know, he's eventually going to grow out of featherweight. So, I mean, there's just so many just AJ McKee versus Pettis. I mean, that's like a little bit away. But I'm just talking about, like, these are things that are just fun to think about. Just fun to think about. And, you know, I think this is really good. I think this is really confirmation that Sergio Pettis is signing to Bellator, not just in the cage, but behind the scenes and the bank account and just the way they're treated. I think the Pettis household is very happy with the move to Bellator. I think with Anthony leaving the UFC, rather. I know he hasn't signed to Bellator yet, but I think the Pettis household realizes that there is life outside, a good life outside the UFC.
I agree.
I'll tell you what, there's one organization that we're leaving out that made a big splash this year in a situation very similar to this. What about Bare Knuckle? Are they a player? Because we didn't think Paige VanZant was a player. And guess what? Curve ball.
Maybe a one-off. Maybe a one-off for Pettis. I could see a quick one-off. But, you know, the only reason I say no for that, because I don't think if Pettis has having the durability with the bones in his hand.
His hands break a lot.
That's the only reason. But I do like the idea. That's the only reason I kind of wonder about that. But then, you know,
but
what?
It's safer, though.
It is safer. It actually is safer. Not broken bones in the hand, but overall, to your brain facilities, yeah, it is actually safer. Anything else?
Are we going to get Anthony Pettis versus Artem Lobov and Bare Knuckle?
Yes.
I want to see Jason Knight back in.
Sounds like a fight circus fight.
Yeah. I want to see Jason Knight back in a cage doing MMA. I miss Jason Knight. Is he?
I want to say he was supposed to.
Were you going to say?
Like, I think there was some promotion that was going to throw him in there. I thought he had a fight booked for some promotion in a cage, but I don't think it ever actually happened.
All right. Do you want to take some more questions? Or we're at hour 20.
We can wrap it. We got a ton of time to film that.
Yeah, we got a whole month. We got 3 weeks, guys. we'll answer all your Misha Tate coming back questions next week or the week after that. And a lot of Paige VanZant questions. Yeah.
Now I'm surprised we didn't get any questions about Dana White's strange promo.
We got a couple.
Mostly Ben Askren versus Jake Paul.
Hey,
weird, silly sport this is.
We got a few weeks. We got a few weeks.
Anyway, I'm Jose Youngs. That's Casey. That's Mike. I'm sorry for the audio things. You can blame Vox, and they're forcing me to update in the middle of a live stream. Anyway, that's Casey, producer extraordinaire. You can find Mike. Go listen to Between the Links, where him, AKA, and James Hsu break down their picks for the end of the year awards. And then Thursday, tomorrow, he'll be back with What the Heck. You can find out. I'm sure he's tweeted or will tweet the lineup soon. You can find all his work there. You find this stuff along with all of MMA fighting stuff on Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all that. But until next Wednesday, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas!
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.